Welcome in to Open Gym here on Texas Sports Unfiltered. Myself, Patrick Davis, alongside Matt Gallatin of Texas Longhorns on SI. And of course, you, the third member of Open Gym. Text lines open 512-222-9328. And of course, over there on the chat, Facebook, Twitch, X, and on YouTube. And Matt, not been the best 24 hours for you in the world the last 24 hours, but it was a good ride. It was a good ride, Matt, and a hell of a game last night.
Yeah, it was, you know, that's the most nervous I've ever been throughout a game. I was so stressed throughout that entire thing. I couldn't even bring myself to drink because I was so stressed, which probably made it even worse. I probably should have had a couple of bourbons to calm myself down. But, you know, it was a great season. Lane Kiffin can suck it. You know, I don't think we would have gotten that far if Lane Kiffin would have stuck around. Honestly, I don't think we would have beaten Georgia. I get why they didn't call the PI at the end of the game, but they probably should have. Really, what lost this game was the line of scrimmage, specifically in the first half. I mean, you're giving up like 6 or 7 yards per carry, and you're getting grinded down in 15 play drives and all that stuff. And like, I agree with Chip, they should have tried to bring more pressure, but that secondary was so shaky throughout the entire game. I didn't necessarily trust how they would hold up in coverage either. So it was kind of you're kind of in a catch 22 there. Really what I think it came down to besides that though was like, hey, if ands and buts, or, you know, what's the saying? Ifs, ands and buts, or bag of nuts, or whatever. Nuts,
we'd all have a Merry Christmas.
Yeah, something like that. If our kicker had made that field goal that he missed that doinked off the left upright, then potentially we're driving down the field with a chance to win the game on a field goal. Instead, we're not, and it's okay. It sucks, but Chambliss was also denied his year of eligibility, his extra year of eligibility.
So they're going to appeal that in a minute, because that one's interesting. So I want to talk about that one a little bit more in a minute. But sticking on the game for a minute. It was a really good game, back and forth. There was a lot of times where I thought Miami was just going to take control of the game, because it did look like they were forcing their will a lot more than Ole Miss was. And then, you know, you get the huge run by Lacy. You get some big plays out of Lacy. You get some big plays out of Trinidad Chambliss. And they're able to stay in the game. And they're able to just continue to be there and then take the lead and then show that they're there. And it's like every time Miami looked like they were just going to be able to run the football and take control, they weren't able to do it. And what we said it before is like, if Carson Beck plays well, and, you know, if it's a competition between him and Trinidad Chambliss, that's not good. And Carson Beck was able to get the right plays at the right time and lead those drives against a tired Ole Miss defense. And then it comes down at the end of the game. That one was so annoying, because it was like, you're allowed to fist fight and hand, you know, arm fight and whatever else down the stretch. And it just went just over that line. But it's really hard to make that call. I get that's really, really hard to make that call. So it is pass interference. There's no one that can deny it was pass interference. But it's like, do you make that or not? And it's just past the line where you're like, you probably should have, especially because it's not a spot foul in college. So you're not like, you're getting the ball at the one and you can win the game now.
Yeah,
it is more of like, no, you get another untimed down, but you're getting it still, you know, 15 yards, you get another shot at it, but they can just play good defense. So it was frustrating, because out of everything and how good that game was, to kind of just get away with one at the end. I know all game, if you look online all game, everyone said that it was completely rigged one way or completely rigged the other. It's like, you can't ever just have a game where everyone's like, oh yeah, these officials aren't, you know, perfect, but it's, you know, we're getting calls are going both ways. But yeah, I saw people saying that they're trying to screw Miami and then they were trying to screw Ole Miss. So, you know, there was a lot of them, the targeting calls that were what targeting technically is now, but it's like, okay, by the book, it's targeting, but clearly there's no intent. So it feels like that should be a 15-yard penalty and no ejection. Like, they need to find a middle ground rule on that, to be like, that is targeting, but you don't lose the player anymore, because there's clearly, like, he didn't lower his head. He didn't do that. It was just helmet-to-helmet contact.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. The targeting thing needs to get looked at because neither of those were any sort of intent whatsoever. They were both kind of bang bang plays, in my opinion. One was a little bit softer than the other. And then you call the one that I thought was a little bit more violent, and or you don't call the one that's a little more violent, and then you call the one that's not nearly as violent. It was really weird. But I was all, you know, in the terms of the ifs and buts were candy and nuts thing. Miami also dropped 4 interceptions. So that game could have been wildly in Miami's favor. I felt like Miami dominated that game for the most part. Ole Miss was just able to stick around because of some big plays and Trinidad Chambliss really grinding. Obviously, the Kawan Lacy thing was a big hindrance to them after that touchdown run. He didn't touch the ball again until the fourth quarter because he was dealing with that hamstring thing. But you know, they threw the ball 20 straight times after that. They didn't even really try to run the football very much. So maybe that was still going to be part of the game plan. I don't know, because it's really hard to run against that Miami team. I do think the refs were too present in that football game.
Yeah.
There were some calls that there's no way you could get around. Like the face mask that Ole Miss had on that last Miami drive was very obvious. The late hit by Miami on, I believe it was Lacy, was very obvious. Things like that I'm fine with. Obviously the false starts and things like that. They missed a lot of holds, but they also called a lot of ticky-tack stuff. So it was really strange. Big Ten officials, you know, what can you say about the Big Ten other than they suck at everything? But I mean, now I guess I kind of have to pull for Miami for the rest of this thing because
we don't want the Big Ten to win another
one. We can't have the Big Ten win another one. No. And honestly, quite honestly speaking, I think that Miami is the only team that can beat Indiana at this point.
Yeah. Now we all don't want Miami to win because we don't want the banner to go up at Kyle Field that we lost the national champion. Banner that's going to go up, so we don't want that. But the same part, they're going to put up a banner. We lost the team that played in the national championship, so either way it goes. Before we get too far into it, because I want to get in this Trinidad Chambliss story as well. Matt's getting more bad news.
Ole Miss true freshman wide receiver Winston Watkins just entered the transfer portal.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to see a lot of that out of Ole Miss, and then whoever loses the game tonight as well. We'll get into that other game tonight a little bit later. I just wanted to pull the Band-Aid right off with Matt, so we'll do that. We'll talk Trinidad Chambliss here in a minute, too. Pull the Band-Aid off, and then happy show. It is a open bar, open gym Friday, so if you got them, enjoy on a Friday afternoon. I got to be somewhat careful because I got to go to a show tonight, so I can't be getting crazy. But I'll have a couple drinks with you guys here on a Friday afternoon. And should be fun. Should be a good show today. A lot to get into. If you want to come out tonight, by the way, come on down to Antone's. My man Bama Bruce and Vallejo are playing at Antone's tonight. So it'll be a fun show there tonight. They go on at 10 p.m., Matt. I'm thrilled that the headliner is going on at 10 p.m. That's how I know I'm really old. So I'm like, man, I know. Going at midnight, man. I got to get there and then do it. And if you start at midnight, it means I got to miss the opening bands. And I know everybody in all the bands, so I got to get there early. And that's not a brag. It's a lot of family and stuff. So it's people that I've known for a very long time. We'll go into it. I also, Matt, do you ever use these little Yeti cooler things on your beers, the little Yeti cooler koozies?
Oh, yeah. I've got a bunch of them.
So I don't really use them much. I have a couple at the house, and I don't ever really use them. I'm using one today. Do you ever have the problem of misjudging how much beer is left in your can when you drink with one of these koozies on it?
No, not really. I just kind of go until I can't taste it anymore.
I feel like my professional drinking, I'm so used to being able to pick up a can, know how much is in there, know the tilt level and everything when I get there, that with these, I think they're much more full than they are, but then you'll pick them. I'm just not used to the weight because I don't use them enough. So I don't, I'm not as sure how to use them. So I always get a little nervous whenever I use one, but I'm trying to use it today because I'm going to I'm nursing it a little bit more today. I don't want to go through like four.
I mean, be careful.
Adam Johnson sounds familiar, but that's a familiar sounding name. So I don't know them personally.
It's like John Smith.
Yeah. So I may have met him at some point, but we're not close friends. We may have met or seen. I may have seen a band of his or something throughout the years, for sure.
Just real quick, Patrick, let me kind of throw a wrench in this conversation so it kind of grinds to a halt through with Namon and Toll. Had Texas been the 10 seed in the playoff, I can guarantee you the Aggies wouldn't have been the 7 seed in the playoff. They would have probably flipped them in Ole Miss or flipped, you know, Oklahoma or like Alabama and A&M. They would have done something so those teams wouldn't have matched up twice in a row. I can guarantee you that would not have happened. And they probably still would have had Ohio State in the second round, but like that, I can guarantee you that would not have happened.
Yeah. No, it would have changed a lot of things. And again, ifs, ands, and buts. We can pretend that we would have won or we would have lost or whatever else in that. Until you play the game, they're all good football teams. Until you play the game, it doesn't really. So we can fantasy book. We can fantasy book. Well, if Texas played every one of these teams, they win by 35 because here's the reasons. Or Texas would lose by 35 because here's the reason. We can put out the cases. It is how it works. But so we saw the game last night. Miami moves on. Ole Miss is done. And then the NCAA thinks, you know, the timing we should put this out, not before I get, but we can't wait because they got to know what they're doing with the quarterback. So we're going to put out our ruling that we knew what the ruling was probably 3 weeks ago, like that he's not getting another year. This is an interesting one because, again, like I love you, Matt. There's absolutely no reason he should get another year. None. Zero reason he should get another year. I get the other because look, he played. He sat out a year of football and then he's been healthy for 5 years. There's basically a tonsil thing that he said he had, but he didn't report it as an injury. And it wasn't something where you could really say, because that's the only reason you could say is you go a medical redshirt year for his swollen tonsils is the only reason you get another year. But that's then I could just be like, oh, yeah, no, but I have plantar fasciitis, so I couldn't play. Go give me another year. Like you can't, there's just not enough evidence to back up what he's saying and enough to go into it where it is that slippery slope. And here's the reality. And this is the interesting part now, because it's going to decide a lot more of other players, because we know Diego Pavia successfully did this, which is Diego Pavia sued the NFL or sued the NCAA and got an injunction. For everybody who thinks Diego Pavia has won that lawsuit, he has not. The lawsuit is still active. It's not been solved. It has not been settled one way or the other, because you can draw out these lawsuits for an entire season. So if Trinidad Chambliss wants to play another year and he decides, man, they're saying maybe third round, fourth round NFL, which I think he'd go probably second round right now, maybe even first, depending on how many guys need a quarterback. But I think people would really like to get Trinidad Chambliss on their team. He could say, he goes, I'm coming back. All I have to do is get a court to give an injunction and then drag it out for a year. It's all I have to do. I do not have to win the case, but then I can play another year and I can go in there. Cause that's all Diego Pavia did. He has not won that lawsuit, still going, but he got an injunction that said the NCAA couldn't stop him from playing. So he gets to play. Ole Miss is going to try and push that they have already signed him to a contract. And so they're hindering what Ole Miss can do by not allowing a guy to play a 6 year. The precedence this sets for everything is horrific and terrible. It is basically ending eligibility as it's known now in entirety. It does not matter. You can say, well, now you can say you can only play for 4 years, but you could sit on the bench for 10, be a 30-year-old man starting for the first time and have 4 years of eligibility left. It's what they're trying to do. So you just go, no, I was hurt all of those. Like the rules of what they're trying to be able to pull off to get some of these guys to stay is it's asinine. It's college football. 5 years, man. You get 5 years. The COVID years are over. I know Carson Beck's in year six. I get that. He got the COVID year, his first one. So he got it. That one didn't count. I don't like that either. But I get why it was there and everybody had it. But I just – like, I'd like to hear your argument on the other side, Matt, because this 6 year of eligibility for these guys who are basically like, oh, I didn't get good enough until later, so the rules don't apply to me.
Well, I'm not sure that, you know, I'm not sure that he's necessarily saying, you know, the rules don't apply to me, I'm not good enough yet. I just think that he legitimately believes that he lost a year in the middle of his college football journey, not was sitting for 4 years and then sat for a year and then tried to play again. He's basically saying, like, I lost a year that I could have been playing football because I had an injury, loose term injury, if it was a tonsil thing, whatever it is. And I want that year back because it's an injury redshirt.
Yeah.
Everybody else is getting injury redshirts. Why shouldn't I get an injury redshirt? Because I missed a year due to a injury. And I think that's fair. If you're sitting for 3 years and then you finally get to play and then you play for 4 years, that's ridiculous. But it's in the middle of his career, is it not?
He's saying, I'm sitting for three and I'm going to play for three. That's what he said. That's what he is. Cause he sat for 3 years and then he played his last year, his fourth year. He started and wanted to win the D2 title. And then he's played at Ole Miss. This would be his sixth year, would be his third year. So he sit for three, play for three.
Well, then whatever. Like,
but that's
the point is, is he claiming injuries in those other years?
No, because he doesn't have to. He will next year, though. Why wouldn't he next year? Why wouldn't Diego Pavia claim an injury somewhere else? Wouldn't anybody?
Here's the thing. Personally, I could care less whether he comes back or not, because I don't think there's any way that Ole Miss can recreate what they did this year, regardless of who they put on the roster, because it was just a really good series of events that happened for them, and the right things happened at the right time, and the team came together because of a big, you know, big piece of adversity with Lane Kiffin. And I think that that's why they were able to beat Georgia, is because they were all together because of that. I think that if Lane Kiffin was there, that wouldn't have happened, because the team wouldn't have been as tight as it was. So I could care less whether he comes back. I'm just saying, if Carson Beck gets to play 6 years,
but he had the COVID year, everybody got the COVID year.
I don't care if he had the COVID year. Like, if he gets 6 years, then another guy should get 6 years. If Diego Pavia gets 6 years, then somebody else should get 6 years. And you're playing Division II football. You're not even FCS. Like, what are we even talking about
here? I get it, but Diego Pavia did not get granted a 6 year of college. He didn't. He legally found a loophole, and they're trying to go to court to fight it to close that loophole for good. And that's what Trinidad Chamble's going to do. He's going to try and find it if they decide to do it. Now, the difference is Pavia doesn't really have an NFL future, and Trinidad does. So there's a difference of, well, no, but like, he's not 5'8". So there's a better chance of him being able to go in and do it. And I get, if you want to say it's a medical redshirt and all of that, and you want to believe that that's real and not somebody saying, I wasn't good enough to be a starter for 3 years, and my coach there is clearly an idiot because I should have been starting way before, clearly. That's the whole thing. Is it just doesn't feel genuine. It feels like we found a loophole to do it. That's the same concept of why they signed the contract with him staying. So everybody's like, who's saying, well, it'd be funny to go to LSU. He's under contract to Ole Miss. If he's able to play, he will play at Ole Miss. And one of the reasons they do that before the requirement came out, before the ruling came out, was so that if it goes to court and they don't sue in federal court, they sue in Mississippi court, they can go to the Mississippi court and go, we have a contract with a player and the NCAA is preventing the contract from going through. That is financially detrimental to both parties and not financially detrimental to them. So they're trying to stop it. So then all they need is an injunction. All they need is an injunction, and then he can play another year. I get why you're late in the game and all that sucks, but I don't like adding extra years. Like, all the problems in college, I don't like adding more to them.
Okay, so he's trying to get his sixth year.
Mm-hmm.
He redshirted his freshman year in 2021.
Yep.
Is he claiming the 2022 year is his injury redshirt year?
Either 2022 or 2023. I don't remember.
It's 2020. I believe it's 2022.
I think it is.
He played in two games, wasn't able to play the rest of the season, supposedly, because of this injury. Like, I don't understand what everybody's problem is with him getting a medical redshirt, because he's played 3 years after that. Well, it
you can't like, not who's say he, I'm hurt and then come back.
Who's he going to tell? It's Division II. Who's listening?
You'd have
he didn't know at that time that he'd have an opportunity to play more football.
No, I mean,
at least at a level like Ole Miss for sure. So, yeah, I mean, some of it goes into I want to increase my draft stock, and I think that another year could help me do that. And that's probably the genesis of why he's trying to do all of this. But if everybody else gets a medical redshirt, why can't he?
I get, but there's rules about this. Like, there's rule. They have ways they do this. And you don't get to come back and go, 4 years ago, I missed a year, so I need another year. That's not, because no one does that. You go, I'm applying for my medical redshirt now, so I have it. Well,
then he probably won't get it.
He probably won't, but that's what I'm saying. He didn't. He already didn't. And like the only thing now that will get him to play, because like also you gotta remember the NCAA, rightfully so, as much as I hate the NCAA and so many things they do, is trying to at least say, guys, we cannot keep allowing more eligibility. We cannot just keep blanketly letting everyone who's really good play another year. We can't do that. Like, we have to stop it somewhere. And it didn't used to be as big of a problem as it is now, because now there's money. And before it was like, you want to play another year? Fine, whatever. Now it's like, okay, now there's $4 million tied to this. So it's a bigger deal that more and more schools are like, hey, forget the NFL, sit with us for another year and it'll be better for you. So that concept of like, one, that's another reason he didn't redshirt then, is he's like, there's no NIL. He wasn't getting any NIL when he was playing before. Now he wants another year. I'm pretty against extended eligibility across the board. You know, unless you come out and go, no, this is a really traumatic injury, and that's why I missed a year, and I should have been playing. But I don't know. I haven't heard enough from anybody other than a very select few that are like, no, that injury was very legit. And it felt more like, no, he was playing a little bit because they were playing him, but he was not the starter, and he wasn't going to play anyway. And he didn't really lose it a year to injury. He's just, he needs another year now because it's $4 million. $4 million is huge. Like, I get that.
I mean, yeah. Again, I totally understand where you're coming from. I totally understand his side of it. He feels that he missed it a year because of an injury. At least that's what he's presenting via his lawyers.
Yeah.
So I just think that if we're going to give medical red shirts to other players, he should at least get more consideration for this. And if, you know, when they do appeal this, if it goes to the Mississippi Judiciary Court or wherever the hell that's going after the NCAA, if they still find that he doesn't deserve another year of eligibility, then fine. Who cares?
Yeah.
But I don't blame him for trying to get it, because everybody else has tried to do stuff like this. Like, retroactively,
I don't blame him for, like, trying to get it,
and I don't blame Ole Miss for trying to keep him around, because he's, if for some reason it does get granted and he comes back next year, he's going to be a Heisman Trophy favorite candidate with Arch Manning and Julian Sayin.
Yeah, 100%. Like, I get why he wants to come back, and I don't blame him for being like, no, this is a really good opportunity, and we found a way to make it happen. And, you know, look, the NCAA has made their decision clear that they believe that it's BS that he did it. Whether that's true or not, I have not been in those meetings. I am not, you know, privy to his medical files and everything else, and talked to his coaches at his previous school. And I have not done all of that. So I can't tell you, you know, with full certainty that he wasn't really injured. And man, but you have to assume that if they went and talked to his old coaches and they were like, oh yeah, he was going to be our starter, but he ended up getting it and he just couldn't play as much anymore. And then we had that, and they go to his doctors and they go, yeah, it really hurt his breathing, so he couldn't really play much, that they would have gone, oh yeah, that's a medical reason. Or if they just went, yeah, I don't remember hearing anything about that. And the doctor's going like, oh yeah, he's swollen tonsils, but you should be able to play football fine. And then you go, okay, well, we don't think you get another year because we just talked to everybody and nobody but Ole Miss people believe that you were really hurt. So that's why, and no, look, the NCAA is corrupt and awful. So maybe it is. Maybe they got all the information. A doctor told him he was on his deathbed and the coaches were like, he was going to be the greatest player ever at our school and we couldn't play him because of this injury. Maybe that's the case. Probably somewhere in the middle. But I that's where it's like looking at it. It just feels I'm against the Diego Pavi thing, him trying to play for another year. And that's like him trying to say JUCO doesn't count. And you're like, well, no, let's not do that either. And let's not just try and get you into another year. I'm against that as well. I was against this year for him. I get he had a great year and everything else, but I don't think it made the game of college football better to have more 25-year-olds, 26-year-olds in it. I don't think it makes. And the reality is too, once you start getting into that world, you start actually competing with the NFL more, and the NFL will come after you. And the NFL, as much as college football is really big, the NFL is bigger. It just is. And I know it may not be to us or to anybody else, but in the grand scheme of money and everything else, it's just bigger. And definitely more unified than college football is. So they're able to pull off, really kind of shutting things down for you and cutting you down. So at the end of the day, it's an interesting story to see what happens. Because, again, if he gets it, then we will see more stories like this. The same thing as we'll see more of, Diego Pavia stuff in every one of these. The NCAA has been pretty across the board fighting it on everybody and fighting it in court. One of the few court battles they're actually doing, and probably the only ones they're actually winning, are these court battles saying you should not get extra years of eligibility. We have a pretty standard set of rules, and this is what the rules are. You didn't follow the rules. But since he already has a contract, that's what they're going to try and do. It's an interesting plot to watch over the offseason. And now for Ole Miss, they have to go try and find out if they need to go try and get a starting quarterback. Because they're not necessarily there with a starter, they're the favorites to get Deuce Knight right now.
He was, I believe, I don't remember what RPM or what On3 calls it. Is it RPM or Crystal Ball? I get those confused, but he was Crystal Balled / RPM to Ole Miss, and apparently they're also looking at DJ Lagway, which I would much rather have Deuce Knight than DJ Lagway at this point.
Yeah. So it is, in the grand scheme of things, it's a big deal because of who the player is and because of how good he was. It comes down to really good players suddenly needing another year of eligibility. And Diego Pavia really started, was the first bigger one. So that kind of set the precedent of maybe we can get this done. So I'm not blaming it on Ole Miss because, again, if you ain't trying to figure out a way to win these games, then go do it. But, yeah, they got Deuce Knight. And if they don't have Trinidad Chambliss next year, I don't know if Deuce Knight's the guy they want to roll with as the only option.
I mean, he wouldn't be their only option for one. I mean, they've got AJ Maddox there, who's a really talented player. I don't know that if I'm Ole Miss, I'm convincing Deuce Knight to come to Ole Miss and be in a competition. I think that if you're pitching that to him, it's like, okay, you're going to be the starter. Otherwise, he's just going to go somewhere and be the starter. And I don't think you can pitch that to DJ Lagway either, because that's why he left Florida, because he wasn't guaranteed the starting job. So maybe there's another name in there that they're going to try to find for a second quarterback that's not DJ Lagway. But in my opinion, if you're bringing in Deuce Knight, you can't bring in DJ Lagway or vice versa. It has to be one or the other.
Okay.
Because neither of those guys want to compete with each other. And Ole Miss isn't going to want to pay both of them the amount of money that they're probably asking for to compete with one another, and then the other ride the bench for the rest of the year.
No, I'm with you. That is kind of the bigger piece, is you have to pay both of them really good money to come in because they are both very talented players. It is interesting, the DJ Lagway, that he was all on board for Baylor, and it feels like maybe that was also, over-reported at the time because he hadn't signed, but that's, what you got to do in the market is you want to be the first to report things. See, report, he's agreed and he's committed, but he hasn't signed the paperwork yet. So he technically is still available. We know Damond Williams, and that story has ended up with him last night saying he's going back. His agent left him. Everything kind of fell downhill really quickly after he said he was going, that he was leaving again. It ends up that Washington gets him back. I don't know how they're going to spin that to the masses, that's a great thing, but we'll see what they try and push to say that, man, how great is it we got Damond Williams, the guy who maybe doesn't want to be here. So we'll see what they say out of that one, but interesting stuff there. As for Texas football in the portal and where they're at today, how it's been, another departure, another addition today so far. We saw Kobe Black has been the latest name to put his name into the transfer portal, that Kobe Black has decided that he is moving on, that he did not like where the offer was, slash what his role was going to be in this offense next year, our defense next year. So he's decided that he will move on, which again is, Kobe probably wasn't the starter next season, but he was definitely a rotational piece who was going to see the field quite a bit, because he saw the field a decent amount this season. So he was going to see the field quite a bit next season. But difficult to see another player leave. And then adding Dylan Sikorsky as another offensive lineman, a really good young talent to bring in to fill out a room where you just saw so much attrition this offseason in the portal. So you got to bring in some guys. He's an interesting name to bring in. Really high potential guy. Probably not a starter day one, but a really high potential guy.
I guess I'll start with Kobe Black. I mean, I think that people are going to have to get used to losing young players at this point, mm-hmm. because if you can't guarantee a guy a starting job, then he's probably going to walk to somewhere that does guarantee him a starting job. And I think that Cade Phillips, Warren Roberson, I think that Wardell Mack is probably coming back. I think that you got, Bo Masco in there. There's tons of competition ahead of them. And I think that they're just like, okay, we have two guys probably that we're going to play at the star position that he's probably better suited for anyway. And then on the outside, with the type of defense that we're trying to play, you haven't been consistent enough in man coverage for us to guarantee you a starting spot or anything like that. So sure, he's a talent, and I think he's going to be a really good player one of these days, but I think that what they're trying to do right now, he just doesn't fit into the plans, and he wants a better opportunity to compete and start somewhere. So, that's just the day and age of college football that we're in, is this kind, these kinds of things are going to happen. There probably is going to be a couple of players that come back that have already entered the portal. So that'll kind of lessen the blow a little bit, I think, for some people. But, all this stuff is one way one day, and then the rug can get pulled out from you the next day, and everything could change, and that can go both ways.
Yep.
So it's just a weird time that we're in right now. Anytime you see a young, talented player that you brought in that you're excited about when they signed, and then they decide to go to the transfer portal, it sucks. But I think that they're trying to do everything they can to win right now, and I don't know that Kobe Black is in their win right now plans. I mean, there's a reason he wasn't playing for a majority of the season at a consistent rate. Like, he played against Florida and got absolutely embarrassed by Dallas Wilson, and then he was kind of spot duty the rest of the year, and then because of injury he has to come in against Texas A&M, and then he ends up making a couple of big plays. So it's perspective, I think, is the most important thing here. I think that they feel pretty good about where they are at corner right now. Maybe they'll bring in another one, but I think that they probably feel pretty good about where they are right now on the outside corners.
Kobe's a heck of a player. He is, it did feel like maybe they were, we talked about the development of players this season wasn't where it needed to be. Now you got Muschamp in there, some other guys coming in. The reports of Blake Gideon is coming back. You feel a little bit better about that secondary and getting trained. So you'd like to keep some of those young guys you felt had potential a year ago. But yeah, for Kobe Black, if he feels I'm too far behind, and you know, as you go and you go, okay, freshman was one point and then sophomore. Now, if I'm going to be a junior and I'm still not starting, how long is it going to be before somebody's a freshman and a five-star steps up in front of me? And mm-hmm. so those, you know, you lose some of them and you hate it. But if they're, if there's, again, if they have an agent who's basically telling them on the table, I just got another DB that's ranked way below where you'll be ranked, and I just got them triple what you're making at Texas. I mean, it's harder to not say, it's harder to say no to leave.
Yeah. And that's just the NFL, you know, mentality bleeding into college football to a certain degree. It's like when you're a free agent, because technically everybody in college football is a free agent at the end of every year.
Yeah.
You're going to go sign the deal that makes you more money and that guarantees you a better opportunity. So it, like, people need to get used to, every program in the country is going to lose 15 to 20 guys at least every year, sometimes more, sometimes less. And that's just the name of the game these days. The good news is I think that they have a plan with a bunch of really good players right now, and that all of this, you know, frustration and fear and anxiety is probably going to dissipate by the end of next week.
That, I mean, that's where we're trying to be. And so, like, I think that guys like Sikorsky are good palate cleansers, maybe, for how bad the week has been of losing so many guys and maybe not getting back where you're like, oh, our depth is completely gone. Like, we're losing so many pieces. Like, how are we even going to get 85 scholarship players, much less the 105? How are we going to get to that number? Like, how are we going to have enough players that we feel confident going into next season? And while Sikorsky isn't necessarily the guy you get that you freak out about because, oh my God, we got the number one lineman, interior offensive lineman in the portal, he is a really good piece that you need. And I think some of those dominoes will start falling a little bit more and maybe going, okay, now we just need those big pieces that we know are waiting. And as long as they're still on the board, you can't say we've lost them yet. Cam Coleman is a perfect example. Believe he's in Tuscaloosa right now, but you go, he still hasn't said where he is going. He hasn't, you know, until he does, we can't say we've completely lost on him. And we've seen enough guys. I mean, Lingo Gafau is a perfect example of guys that were like, you know, have been slated to go to one space for a week. And then all of a sudden they're in a new, you know, he goes to Colorado. Yeah. So even though it's crystal ball predictions and everything else, there's a level of guesswork and not really knowing until the final numbers come in, until the person signs on the dotted line where they're going to be. So I think that helps you a little bit because you can get excited about, okay, we got a fun, and also he's just got a fun name. So and I can't believe what, and I can't remember who, but one of our chatters yesterday brought up the point that he is majoring, or at least was in Oregon State, for food management, like food service management. So really hitting into the Sikorsky, Chicago, Polish sausage king of Chicago.
Yeah, I mean, he's the kind of guy that you bring in to kind of start to build the depth on your offensive line with players that are more well equipped to help you in a rotational capacity next season and doing things that your offensive line previously couldn't do. Like, people are going to see his body type and they're going to say, oh, he's just the same thing as Connor Stroh, but he's got much better feet. He can move laterally a lot better. He's more athletic. He's really good in run blocking. And a lot of the stuff about, like, his PFF grades are like in the 60s or the 50s or whatever. A lot of that has to do with, like, the fact that he was part of a really bad offensive line. And when you don't have good pieces around you, it can affect the way that you play yourself. But he played really well against, like, Texas Tech and Oregon this year. Like, he held his own very well against some really, really good defensive lines. So that's the kind of more important thing you need to see rather than putting everything into a PFF grade. But he's big. He's a mauler. He moves people. He can pull really well. He played tackle. He can play guard. He really can play anywhere that you ask him to along the offensive line. So he can be that rotational guy that comes in and out when somebody needs a break or somebody misses a few plays with an injury, and then he can develop into a full-time starter later down the line.
I agree. Thank you, Randy. I couldn't remember who it was, but thank you, Randy.
Yeah, and I think that there's probably some players that are still about to enter the portal.
Yeah.
That Texas is looking at really hard on the offensive line. I'll just put it that way.
Yeah, and until for saying they'll spend less money bringing 4 and 5 stars in, they're still going to do it because there's no better way to scout these 4 and 5 stars and find the ones you do want to keep and the ones that you're okay with letting go because maybe they weren't culture fits or maybe they didn't work as hard as you thought or maybe you find a flaw in the game that you do like, you hate or not. You still have to bring those in. It's still part of the game. It's still, you know, on-campus scouting of these guys that they are still keeping a number of players that are part of it. Like we've heard that Christian Clark just signed his deal or has agreed to a deal today to stay at Texas. So it's like there is the revenue sharing versus NIL. We talked about a lot yesterday, so I don't want to go into it again. But if you didn't hear that whole thing yesterday about how revenue sharing and NIL are changing the game right now, I talked about it at length yesterday. The show is available on YouTube.com or anywhere you get your podcast. But the fact is you can still use your revenue sharing to go out and get those 4 and 5 stars. You just can't pay them for 3 to 4 years out of that revenue sharing. They have to move to NIL at a certain point. And so that's kind of the transition that you're going through right now. But that money is set aside. It's part of the budget. So it may go down a little bit. You may be right that they're going to drop it from 10 million of the budget or 8 million of the budget or whatever it is going to go to fresh incoming freshmen and the rest will go to everybody else or the rest will go to this team and the rest will go to portal. But you know, well, how many players were we paying? You know, how much was Bo Barnes making? How much were some of these other really high recruited guys, Kobe Black making? How much were they making out of, you know, the fund? They go, okay, that just goes back into for next season. And those young guys, we know that there's a floating market of people who are going to transfer in and transfer out. That allows us to be able to do that and keep paying those young guys because you do want to see who's out there and you do want to give those guys auditions and practice and on the field. So I think they're still going to go for it. You have to develop certain players. You have to try and find, and you do want to find your next Anthony Hill or Colin Simmons. I mean, those are the guys that you have to find to be a really great team. And so, like, I'm not saying you're not going to go out and try and go get a Colin Simmons or Anthony Hill. Those guys played for us for years and they'll make plenty of money every year. Never a question about it. They're going to be taken care of.
Yeah, I wouldn't have any doubts that they're going to continue recruiting at the same level that they're recruiting at and have been for the last few years. You just have to be prepared for some of those players that you sign within year one or year two. If they don't get an opportunity to be on the field as a starter the following year and earn some NIL money, then they're going to walk. It was like I was saying earlier in the show, that's just how it is these days. And it's an unfortunate fact, but it is what it is. I can guarantee you they're still going to be recruiting, you know, the top quarterbacks and the top running backs, wide receivers all the way around. They're still going to go really hard and make sure that they sign Easton Royal. All of those things are still really important. It's just, you know, you get to pick and choose now kind of which ones that you get that you keep around and then which ones you let walk and go find a new opportunity. So they'll still be recruiting at a high level. And, you know, that's just the game that everybody's playing now. It's not just Texas. And yeah, I mentioned that yesterday, Randy, about Ty Haywood, you know, Denton Ryan kid. You would imagine that Texas is probably going to at least have a conversation with him or look into it. Maybe they've already looked into it. I don't know, but I think it would be a decent idea to bring in a young developmental tackle that doesn't have to start in year one that has a lot of talent.
Yeah. I mean, that is what you want to be able to pull in, is pull in some of these guys and see what they're going to be able to do. But yeah, I think there's still going to be more names hopping into the portal and more guys that you have to look out for. One of the things I want to do on a Friday and ask you about, Matt, is one of the questions that I was looking at in the fact of one of the reasons why I think a lot of Texas fans got more anxious about this portal was a couple guys leaving that we felt were more part of the leadership mold for Texas, especially a DeAndre Moore, especially a Trey Wisner on the offensive side of the ball. defensively, we knew Anthony Hill was going to be gone. We knew Michael Taft was going to be gone. So maybe not as much of a culture shock on the defensive side of the ball. Now, we thought LaFau may be that guy to stay around and be the culture bearer on the defense along with some other guys, but especially in that linebacker room. But I wanted to talk to you about, and we can ask this in the chat too, of who are the leaders of this team going forward? Because I think when we look at this season and us describing them for most of the season as a very young team, was that the leadership level wasn't the same as it had been in the past several years, where it went from Bijan and Roshan, who were really, you know, the bears of kind of bringing in that new leadership after Tom Herman and then the Sark era. Those guys kind of brought it in. And then Quinn Ewers, where a lot of people said that maybe he wasn't the most vocal guy, but he was a really good leader in the locker room. And we saw an Anthony Hill. We saw definitely a Michael Taft be a guy that were leaders out there on the field. And DeAndre Moore kind of worked his way into being a leader after Jay Witt had taught him how to be a leader. And now you sit and you go, TB, you're right. Arch is a leader. We know Arch has got to be a leader. That's a quarterback position. You have to be a leader. But there can't be one. And so we'll go on offense and defense here. But offensively, Matt, who are you looking at that kind of starts to take over that role? Maybe in the wide receiver room, maybe in the tight end room, maybe on the offensive line. Who in the running back room do you feel could really start to step up? And now these guys, not only am I big man on campus, but the team is respecting me. I am handling my business differently. I'm making sure to get there early. I'm handling my business to make sure everybody knows this is the line of, if you ain't working as hard as me, you ain't working hard enough.
I mean, how many players do I have to pick here? Because I can pick a few.
I mean, I think there's one easy one, and then the rest are kind of a little bit less clear to me. So I think Trevor Goosby is your starting point outside of Arch.
Yeah, I think Arch and Trevor Goosby and Ryan Wingo are your three leaders on offense. Emmett Moseley probably evolves into somewhat of a role there as well. I don't think it's necessarily out of the question to list a transfer in that either, because I mean, look what A.D. Mitchell was for this team when he was when he was in Austin for one season. And Matthew Golden, you could say the same thing. So I think if Texas does end up landing Cam Coleman, I think that he could be one of those guys, because everything I've heard about Cam Coleman and that he's a really hard worker. He's a really good kid, and he could kind of fill that need. So those are a few players on offense. Depending on maybe who you bring in at running back out next to Relik Brown. I know everybody wants Justice Haynes now that he's entered the transfer portal. I think that Georgia Tech has been named as the clear leader for him. I mean, that would be sick if they could get Justice Haynes. Don't get me wrong.
Do they have to have a Haynes on the roster? Is that what it is?
I guess.
They have a Haynes budget from Haynes King to Justice Haynes?
I guess so. That's that. Maybe they have a Haynes, like, you know, NIL deal. And then, yeah, and Andrew McCube on defense last year was another example of that. So, yeah. You know, and I think on the defensive side, it's also pretty simple. It's Colin Simmons, it's Hero Canoe, it's Grayson Littleton, and Jelani McDonald. So I think that there's plenty of leadership still on this team, and it kind of gets lost because everybody's like, oh my God, we have so many players leaving. I mean, out of everybody that's left, Trey Wisner, yeah, obviously really good leader. Parker Livingston, pretty good leader. Outside of that, I can't really think of one that's leaving in the portal that was a massive leader on this football
team. No, and this is the reason why I ask it, though, is because we're kind of nonchalantly going like, oh, a bunch of these guys can be that. There wasn't this year. Arch wasn't the guy he needed to be. I think he got better at it by the time the season went on. But I don't think we had a lot of leadership this year. I think when things went badly, they went really badly. And it just went downhill because there wasn't necessarily the guys to calm everybody down. This felt like the least team we'd had in the last 3 or 4 years. That there wasn't, we weren't hearing the stories about everybody picking each other up. Now, a name we'll mention in there is Hero Canoe. I think Hero Canoe did step up into that role as someone who came from Ohio State and kind of knew what it was a little bit more. But I think there was a lack of, I think everybody basically just thought Arch has it in control. And it's Arch Manning. He has literally been groomed for this for the last 10 years. He has been groomed to be the starting quarterback of a major program and everything will be fine. And he wasn't ready week one to be there. And you didn't necessarily have all the other guys to pick him up and get him through. And I think Trey Wisner and DeAndre Moore were really good at that. And so when I say, you know, you need multiple guys, it's because naturally in humankind, you're going to get down. There's going to be a day when you're a little bit sicker, and who else needs to be at practice keeping guys accountable? And so, like, that's a question, and I can't tell you no with Ryan Wingo, but I don't know if I've seen Ryan Wingo in the sense of that guy's going to work harder than everybody else on the field. And I'm not saying he isn't, but he also hasn't portrayed that wildly publicly. Now, Quinn Ewers didn't either, and it worked there. So you don't have to be public with everything you do, but that you have to work harder. You have to be able to be the one that the coaches can't yell at you as much as they used to, right? We know that. That's the whole Dwayne Akina thing, was that Dwayne Akina's teeth were a little bit taken away from him because they're like, everyone's going to transfer if you treat people like this. So you have to pull back a little bit. And that's when you need the players to step in. And so it is a big deal that you need the players to keep everybody accountable. And so I think Arch will be much better at it. I think he'll be much better at it in the offseason than he was a year ago, because now he has a lot more like he knows what he did wrong last year. And so now when he talks to Quinn Ewers or, you know, whoever else, or his, you know, his uncles or whoever else, and be like, hey, why did this happen? They go, because you didn't prepare him for this. And you didn't, like, you need to be able to do all of these things. So for the world, I think there is, for the world of culture and leadership, you just have to really be able to state, instead of these guys get a C on their chest, you have to be able to state, these guys, when they call you at 2 o'clock in the afternoon because they heard that you were goofing around and not eating right or whatever else, and they get on your ass, that you respond to them getting on your ass and that they are making that phone call. Man, I heard you out there eating. You're not working out. Haven't seen you in the gym 2 weeks. The hell are you doing? Because that was, you needed during the offseason. Like, we get it. We were behind the eight ball week one this year. This offseason is really big for Texas. You need to have those leaders that are keeping on everybody, making sure, send me what your workout was. Send me what that is. And I know Arch has to lead it, but you need a team to do it. And so that's the thing, is we know Trevor Goosby is a guy on the offensive line. Ryan Wingo right now needs to be the guy at the wide receiver room. Now, can he do that? That's what we got to find out. In the running back room, you got to find your guy in there, which it may be Ryan Niblett if he's working out with the running backs. You may go to Ryan Niblett and say, hey, man, you're a dude. You've done everything right on this team. Like, you have fought. You've been told you're not enough. And you're still here, and you're making big plays in big games. So if Ryan Niblett knows that writer's room, maybe he's the guy calling the running back room. And then on the defense, you have to be able to get through. And I think Jelani McDonald is a perfect guy in the secondary. Keep everybody in there. I think Colin Simmons and Hero Canoe are going to keep guys going. And Colin Simmons got to kind of lead the front because he's the dude. Like, him and Arch, they're the dudes. So you got to keep him in there. It's just making sure you have enough pieces across that when you call that meeting and you yell at some players, you ain't getting laughs. You ain't getting people looking around saying who they're blaming. Everybody knows these guys are in charge. These guys are doing it, and they're not asking questions. They know now. And I think you had that last year. You had too many questions being asked because they just were all young. None of those guys had really been in that position. The team before was so experienced. You didn't have as much of that, especially on the offensive end of the football. Defensively, you had Michael Taft, you had Anthony Hill, you had some guys who had a little bit more skins in the game. But I think the leadership, it's a huge deal, and it's a huge deal for the offseason, Matt.
Yeah, it is. It's definitely a huge deal. And I think that part of the reason that Arch failed this past year, I hate even say failed.
I failed. I just don't think he did what he needed. I don't think he did as well as he could.
I don't think he did as well as he could have over the summer and maybe in the spring and in preseason, because I think that he still thought of himself as a guy who had to earn everybody's respect and had to go out there and prove that he was a leader. And I think that everything he went through the season, in the media, you know, all the outside noise, plus what he had to deal with on the field, I think the way that he specifically played on the field and battled through the offensive line and getting hit all the time and bouncing back and being mm-hmm. tough, and like even in the bowl game, bleeding from the mouth and like just saying, I'm going to stop giving an F. And then he goes out like the next drive and has a 60-yard touchdown run.
I think he actually said, can we just get an F and stop right here?
Well, he was saying multiple things. That's the point. He was unfiltered. He was he was intense. He was loud on the sidelines, and having to battle through all that stuff, I think was huge for his ability to be a leader going into next season. I mean, even in the Florida game, like when he was bobbing and weaving through the pocket and then getting lit up as he's throwing a football and completing it on the numbers, like that's the kind of stuff that endears you to your teammates. And as the season went on, I think he became much more of a leader inside that locker room, and it's only going to continue to get better. You know, you can't have it's really hard to have a big vocal leader at every single position that's going to rally the troops. But as long as you have a few on each side of the ball, even if it's multiple receivers or, you know, multiple defensive backs or defensive linemen or whatever, everybody's going to get the message because those guys are going to be leading the offseason workouts. And I think that a couple of the guys that they're looking at in the portal, like at the linebacker position, are the kind of intense, you know,
very much
grind it out, like be a leader on the field type that will really be able to rally the troops, because it's very obvious that they're hard workers and that they put everything out on the field. So I find it very hard to believe that, you know, just because it's a guy's first year in the program doesn't mean that he's going to be able to be a big leader on the football team, because we've seen it for the last 3 years.
No, and I think they're playing the portal differently than they have to bring in some of those guys that, you know, were in leadership positions at their old team. That wasn't necessarily, a lot of those guys weren't necessarily hitting the portal a couple years ago. But you haven't always been trying to go get those guys. You've been getting a lot of guys who are looking for a new opportunity or something like that, but not like you said, Cam Coleman, which again, there's no information that I can tell you that he's coming here, but he is a perfect example.
Which one?
Cam Coleman.
Oh yeah.
So there's no information saying he's coming here. We know we're one of the 4 or 5 schools that he's looking at. But the reality of, he is a guy that wherever he goes will be able to step into that wide receiver room week 1, and he has to learn how Texas does things or whoever does things. But he also knows, this is how you work harder than everybody else. This is how I am as good as I am. Is I work as hard, if not harder than anyone else. Like I always like the story, and I'm not a huge Carl Anthony Towns guy, but of when Kevin Garnett went back to the Timberwolves at the end of his career, and Carl Anthony Towns was there and he was trying to make it his team. And they had an unspoken thing of every morning showing up earlier and earlier to be the first person in the gym to try and be the leader of the team. And they finally had to stop it at like, it was like 3:15 in the morning or something. And they're both in the gym and they're like, this is silly at this point. But it was to prove the point of, man, I'm the leader of this team. I am the dude. You're never going to outwork me. So if you get here before me, I'm going to get here earlier the next day. And you just need that attitude over the offseason, because they really need to develop some more of these young guys. And it just felt like last year, the transition was, you guys are now in charge. But you talk about Arch Manning and him not fully being able to believe that he earned it, as someone that fully understands that there's always going to be a class of people that think he was born with a silver spoon in his mouth. And that guy's never worked a day in his life. Even though it's not true, there will always be. So he's lived his way to try and prove it. I think there's also a fact of, if you go for 2 straight seasons saying, I'm preparing like a starter, you think you're preparing like a starter, but you're not preparing like a franchise quarterback in a dynasty type, like that level of quarterback. So you are preparing for every game like it is, but you're not necessarily doing all of the things you have to do to be the guy at the quarterback position. And you don't really know that until you miss out on something or you mess up. And that was just early in the season. And there was just too much of it this year. So when I bring up leadership, I agree with you. I think Texas is in a good position because they do recruit well. They do bring in the right type of people that you believe can be there but it has to be an emphasis. And it was probably an emphasis during the Citrus Bowl prep to be like, we need to get the right guys where they are so that when we get into off-season prep and once we get, you know, to March and once we get to spring football and coming out of spring football, everybody needs to be on that same page of these are the guys that you check in with every single day. And if you don't, you're going to be held accountable. And we're not being nice about it anymore. This is a have to win a national championship year for Arch Manning, for this Texas, for Sark, for all these guys. That's the way you have to view it. I know we can view it differently. They have to view it that way, that this is what our goal is to win the SEC and win the national title. So that leadership is just going to be a big piece of what they try and go do over the offseason to make sure they're in the right place, that when they walk in day one of fall, that the coaches are blown away by what their shape they're in. And we don't necessarily have all the guys. And I think that's big for Hero Canoe because that defensive line every year, there's at least one or two guys who come back like 20, 30 pounds overweight. And you're just like, all right, well now all fall is conditioning for you. Because you didn't stay where you needed to be. But I just think it's a huge, huge piece. And I the reason I brought it up is because it is a scary thing to see leaders go. But it is also what happens at every level of sports all the time. And you have to be able to move on. And I think you're right. I think there are a lot of guys that are ready to take that over. And I think there's some guys who need to be more ready for it. And need to fully understand what they're in, but it's the future of the leadership at Texas, I think, could be brighter next season than it was this season because you do have a few more guys in Colin Simmons, who's now going into his third year of that, Arch, who's going into his second year of that, that they, I think, have a better blueprint now than maybe they had last season.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And like, you know, who won the national championship last year? It was Ohio State.
Yes.
Who were the players on Ohio State that really stepped up and were the leaders of that football team? Will Howard, first-year transfer quarterback.
Yeah.
Trevion Henderson, a guy that was there. Emeka Abuka, a guy that was there. True freshman, Jeremiah Smith, was a big one. And then on the defensive side, you had the incumbent guys like JT Tuimoloau and who's that defensive end whose name's Jack Sawyer whose name was escaping me. But then you also had guys like Caleb Downs, who was in his first year with Ohio State, and so there was a combination of it, and you can find those things as long as those guys come in and work really, really hard and lead by example, keep guys accountable. You don't have to have a history with the program anymore. Yes. And that's why I think that they're being somewhat selective in the transfer portal to a degree, although I heard a report today that there's still like 1,000 players that are set to enter the portal over the next week.
Yeah.
So there's still a bunch of dudes out there who could also fill those roles. So it's a delicate game. You got to get the right guys in place, and the right guys have to hold certain other people accountable. That's how it's always been. It's just a little bit different of a dynamic now. And I think that, you know, it's easy to see why people are afraid of losing Michael Taft and Anthony Hill and guys like that. But it's all going to work itself out because this team went through a lot together this year, a lot of adversity, a lot of disappointment. And they know, I think, what they did wrong as well and how they need to improve. And that stuff's just going to help them in the offseason workouts and all that stuff as we go forward.
Yeah. And Joseph, if Coleman doesn't come here, I think Isaiah Horton is an easy answer. I think there's also going to be still a number of names who hop in the portal that are going to surprise some teams, and there will be big names. So it could be someone that's still there, but at that level right now, Isaiah Horton's probably the last name that you go is really that like top. And I mean, Cam Coleman's above him, but Isaiah Horton would be a name that you go, well, that's a guy who's going to play, you know, starter free next year, ready to go. Trey Richardson is definitely a guy that they're already looking at.
He just committed to Louisville, though, I think.
Okay. So, but yeah, Louisville got two from us.
I mean,
they kept one, but oh, Oh, I'm gonna go throw up.
Santana Wilson also signed there.
Well, look, and I'll say Trey Rich, but that's the thing, is you're not necessarily giving him carte blanche of you're gonna play a bunch. So you're telling the same thing you told Parker Livingston. You're like, you're a really good player, and we could use you, and we're gonna use you a lot, but I can't guarantee you're gonna be a starter, and I can't guarantee you're gonna be a whatever. So it's difficult to get those guys. Isaiah Horton's a lot closer to that world. Cam Coleman is in the unique world of not only are you a starter, you're challenging Ryan Wingo to be the number one guy.
Oh, I don't think there'll be a challenge.
No, but you know what I mean. Of like,
yes.
Yes. Like you're talking 1A and 1B at that point.
Yeah. And two completely different roles too.
I agree. But it's a different, like that one of like, okay, now we feel really good because we have two number ones, which is what you want in any Sark like offense.
Yeah. And like, look at Miami, by the way. Carson Beck came in, did really good things, but Malachi Toney, true freshman.
He's electric.
Listen, my girlfriend doesn't watch any football at all. She couldn't tell you the difference between a first down and a field goal, but she could even tell that, like, she even said to me multiple times, like, that Malachi Toney, that guy's the best player on the field. I was like, hell yeah, he is. He's amazing.
He's electric. Electric, that player.
And a lot of people think that Jermaine Bishop could have a similar type effect for Texas next year, by the way.
No, I've heard that multiple from multiple different people. That Jermaine Bishop could be. So, like, there's other options. And again, we've still got a whole nother week, man. We still have a whole nother week of this, Matt. I don't know how we're going to do it.
Yeah.
I'm not balding, but it might be by the end of the week.
I'm sleep deprived.
I can imagine. We got that. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we still got a lot more to get into. Let's talk. We're going to talk about the game tonight. For Indiana versus Oregon. We will talk about that one. We'll talk some NFL playoffs as well. Texas basketball plays Alabama tomorrow. I won't get too worked up about it, promise. Try not to get too worked up about Texas basketball today. We'll wait till Monday for me to get worked up about whatever Sean Miller says afterwards. But as we go, we've got to get into all of that, make our picks. Lots of good stuff coming up in hour two of Open Gym in just 2.5 minutes right here on Texas Sports Unfiltered.
At Sleep Cycle Center, we can treat your sleep apnea in various ways. My story starts 15 years ago with the loss of my father to undiagnosed, untreated sleep apnea. And this is a very preventable disease, and treatment options are various. Millions of people across America have sleep apnea, and they fail to realize the early warning signs. Fatigue, daytime sleepiness, and snoring are the most common signs. We'll find the best solution using advanced technology, oral and epigenetic appliances, or CPAP. We offer weight loss, oral surgery, and laser treatment. Schedule your appointment today and get your sleep evaluation.
If you're looking to remodel a kitchen, renovate your bathroom, or maybe add some new life to your outdoor space, reach out to our friends at McCall Custom Homes. They are custom home builders and renovators here in Central Texas, and they've been doing it in Central Texas for more than 40 years. It's a father-son team with a ton of experience, and all of that experience is here in the Austin area. So they know what it takes to turn an Austin area home into something truly, truly special. Right now, our friends at McCall Custom Homes are offering free estimates to TSU listeners so they can come out to your place, hear your vision, they can tell you what they can do, and then you can go from there. Don't just take my word for it. Check out their website, McCallCustomHomesATX.com. Look at the gallery of jobs they've done over the last four decades. And then when you're ready, again, reach out to them and they will come to you. McCallCustomHomesATX.com, or you can call or text Mike McCall directly at 512-633-9580. It's McCall Custom Homes. We build value into your home.
Hi, this is Tom McKay, owner of Audiovisual Consultations, and all of us at Audiovisual would like to wish you and your family a happy holiday season. This time of year can get a little hectic, so we want to remind you to relax, enjoy the season with your family and friends, and give us a call at 512-255-8678 for all of your home entertainment needs. This is my favorite time of the year. I love the holidays, the music, the decorations, the presents, the whole darn thing. So this year I'm asking all you listeners to help make this a special holiday for everyone. Smiles are contagious and free, so let's give them away like the government gives away away your money. Let's high-five strangers on the street. Hold the door for people behind us. Tip your servers more than they've ever been tipped before. Give to a charity, or hell, give to a bunch of charities. If someone does a good job, tell them they did a good job. Pat someone on the butt. Sing in public places just because it feels good. And as always, hug your kids until they beg you to stop. Watch some games with your friends and make love to your wife or your husband. I know there's some women listening too. You can still give us a call at 512-255-8678 if you'd like to get some cool electronics. But more importantly, have a great holiday season and a fucking awesome next year.